I've been noticing a slight numbness in my right arm, and I'm wondering if it's related to all the velvety canned cheese I've been eating. Is anyone else experiencing this? If so, please come see me in the announcer booth. Taking the mound for the first time with the Mongers is Felix Domingo, just promoted from rookie ball. Let's see if he can snap the team out of its incredibly dispiriting historic skid.
And welcome to our podcast. I'm Penny.
And I'm Becky.
And I'm Greg.
And this is Murder Magnets, a podcast dedicated to the Peacock original show Poker Face.
This episode, we're covering Poker Face Season 2, Episode 5, Hometown Hero, directed by John Dahl and written by Ryan Johnson, Tony Tost, and Taya Ho.
And as you heard in our little introduction, we are joined this week by Greg, who is the host of several other Podcastica podcasts. He's co-hosted with me a couple of times. We did She-Hulk together and Extraordinary Cast together, which was tremendous fun. He also is the lead for the Wheel of Time podcast, which is excellent, especially for a show like that that is so dense that you really need some help remembering and understanding everything that happened.
Yeah, it is a lot, and I really, really love the podcast and the show and, you know, the source material. So I've really enjoyed everything that I've been able to put out as far as that goes.
That's good. So Mandy couldn't be with us this week. We're very excited to have a guest star, just like the show. And Greg, what has your thoughts been on the season up until this episode?
I really enjoyed the idea of being on the run. So like the first three episodes which was kind of a matter of almost a continuation of last season, and going from place to place, and kind of gave her a reason in order to go from place to place. I'm not sure how I feel about I'm searching for purpose. So I'm just going to pick a random spot. Like, if that's the case, then go back to I can't remember her name, but Cynthia Revo from episode one, and be like, hey, I'm gonna go hang out on your farm and do whatever. But I can appreciate, you know, this is what they're doing. I really enjoyed the first few, but again, the guest stars, like Natasha Lyonne has basically channeled Peter Falk, which you guys have talked about. Her presentation, her laying out of the plots and how things happened, and like, even it's crazy, like even the idiosyncrasies as she speaks and her hand motions are almost precisely Columbo. And I really like it. You know, at the end of the episodes, it's like Scooby-Doo, and except it's not revealing the mask. It's how it happened. And then I thought episode four, which I didn't actually get a chance to watch until last night, was a lot of fun. I love Kumail Nanjiani. And even though he was kind of a twat in this episode, seeing Joe Exotic in gator form, I could only wish that Joe Exotic be eaten by one of his tigers.
Maybe we just need to introduce some meth into that equation.
Yeah.
they had plenty of meth on his farm, I guess, or whatever it was. But no, I had a lot of fun with that one. I really like the ending of episode four. And I know this isn't about, we're not talking about episode four, but episode four where the chief was like, I'm not turning you in for this. Just be better. Pay your penance. Do what you want to do. And just help the community. And because, I mean, that character was a sympathetic character. And I loved that this was the one where, you know, the killer didn't get their just desserts. I think that she did get her just desserts, which was actually kind of a second chance at a life. But anyway, so as far as the season goes, I really, really enjoyed the closeout of the arc with like the on the run arc. But I also love Richard Kind and Rhea Perlman and John Mulaney. I like his stand up. I thought he was a little bit goofy in that episode, but a lot. I think it's kind of the appeal of some. So that's my review of the first four episodes.
Awesome. Well, let's just talk about this episode now, jumping into it. Overall, just one sentence, first impression. Greg, how about you first?
Well, it's got baseball and LSD in it, so I'm in.
All right. Becky, what do you think?
The second I realized this was about baseball, I was all in. So good.
So funny. I do not care about baseball at all, but there are a number of baseball movies that are near and dear to me. Bull Durham being chief among them. I just love that movie so much. And I understand why so many shows like to do episodes around baseball. It's a perfect setting for a narrative. There's so many different ways you could drop into baseball and have metaphors about baseball, like home, running the bases, working as a team. Like, there's a lot of good stuff to work with in there. So I was in.
This gave me a definitive Bull Durham feeling with that opening view of the baseball park.
Yeah, there was a lot of Bull Durham in here. The whole minor league baseball team thing. There were some things that I think were almost exactly copied too. Like the scene where they're all celebrating in the rain.
It was like
the scene where those guys all like turn on the sprinklers on the field and celebrate on the field. I think they used Glory Days for that scene as well in Bull Durham. It's Bruce Springsteen, right? Glory Days?
I don't know.
Yeah, it is.
Well, let's get more into the episode. Greg, you want to read our synopsis for us?
Sure. Hometown hero. Hoping to find community, the same people every day in entertaining dynamics, Charlie takes a job as a ball girl for the Montgomery Cheesemongers at Velvety Canned Cheese Park. When the new pitcher dies from a fastball to the head, it's up to Charlie to solve the case and save the ballpark.
Let's get into our moments to die for. Becky.
Okay, I'm going to nerd out for just a second, but my moment to die for was when they laced the pitcher's gum with LSD and they're like, you're going to Doc Ellis him. And if I could just for a second give a little bit of history on that, is that okay?
Yeah, awesome.
Okay. So he was a pitcher who thought he had the day off. He was playing for the Pittsburgh Pirates at the time, but he also played for my favorite baseball team, the New York Mets. So on June 12th, 1970, he no-hit the San Diego Padres 2-0 in the first game of a two-game doubleheader at San Diego Stadium while reportedly under the influence of LSD. After the Pirates had flown to San Diego on Thursday, Ellis visited a friend in Los Angeles and used LSD, quote-unquote, two or three times. Thinking it was still Thursday, he took a hit on Friday at noon, and his girlfriend reminded him at 2 o'clock that he was supposed to pitch that night. So he flew from L.A. to San Diego at 3 o'clock, got to the stadium at 4:30. The game started at 6, and he said that he threw a no-hitter despite being unable to feel the ball or see the batter or catcher clearly. He also said that his catcher, Jerry May, wore reflective tape on his fingers, which helped him see May's signals. He walked 8 batters, struck out 6, and his second baseman did a great job of some good fielding that saved it. And he pitched a no-hitter on LSD.
That's hilarious. So this was, I mean, they mentioned it. It's not like it's a secret that this was a take on that story. It's fantastic. I'm impressed not just by the guy pitching a no-hitter, but like going to the airport, getting a plane, getting from the plane to the ballpark. All of that while on LSD is amazing.
That's pretty impressive to be able to navigate all of those.
Maybe the girlfriend went with him or something.
Maybe. I hope someone escorted him because no way. I mean, I've never done acid. I'm afraid. I need that control, but I've enjoyed some substances in the past and thank God for good friends surrounding me or I, God knows where I'd even be right now.
No kidding. Greg, what's your moment to die for?
So I had a couple, but I would say, and I mean, I guess it just made it easy because it's still Peacock, but when BJ Novak shows up as Hiram Lubinsky, because you went all Yellow Submarine, it looked like Ringo at first, and then I was like, that looks like BJ Novak. like in the art. And then she showed up and I was like, oh my God, this is amazing. When the entire acid trip for Charlie, I was just like, this is amazing. All of the art, the whale smoking across the in the sky, like the whale blimp, the gum when she puts it on the table and it like splats against. I was hoping to see the gum up against the window when we went back the next morning, but then unfortunately you never did. You see that the mascot costume is what she's talking, like that entire scene was phenomenal. And then all of the baseball, oh, why does it not make sense that every baseball player's dream is to be safe at home? I was like, oh my gosh. Yeah, that was mine.
I like that too, that they did that after her referencing The Office in the beginning.
That's what I was thinking.
That's why she was working at this office, was because she just binged it.
Right. So BJ Novak was in her head. So whether that was BJ Novak playing BJ Novak in her dream or BJ Novak playing Hiram Lubinsky in her dream is open.
Well, I think that he was like BJ Novak's face is who came onto the body because she just binged it. And I was like, oh, that makes sense. And then I was thinking about it. I was like, man, how much do they have to pay? Oh, they'd have to pay anything because it's Peacock.
Well, I'm sure they still have to pay him, but...
Oh, I don't mean him. I mean just like the rights for it.
Oh, for The Office and everything? Yeah, that's true. My moment to die for was the ending. I loved the way that Charlie dropped that whole like, oh, by the way, there's a big league scout in the stands today. And Russ is like, bullshit. Maybe she's right. Maybe she's not lying. What if she's not lying? There could be a scout. Like watching that go through his head and also the look on his face that was kind of dumb. Like, he's really going to fall for this very, very blatant ruse. And then the moment when the reveal happens and the detective, like, takes his disguise off and radios, like, block all the exits. Ball girl was right. And then Russ looks at Charlie and then decides to throw another fastball because it's, like, it's his last time playing professional baseball, probably. He's about to get arrested. And I loved everything about the reveal, the exchange of glances between him and her, and then that final shot where it's like the baseball's coming right for us, like I thought that was brilliant.
I liked the tip of the cap, like he literally tipped his cap to her. He was like, well played,
you win. I might as well now have my fastball and play. My immediate thought was, I'm sure there's a prison baseball team.
Maybe that'll be another episode, like what was that movie with Adam Sandler?
Oh, The Longest Yard.
Yeah. The fastest pitch.
Yeah, maybe. So great. Let's get into our sort of main discussion. Where do you want to start, Becky?
I want to start with the team name and the ballpark. One of my best friends, she works for a minor league baseball team, and they're called the Trash Pandas. And John Oliver, if you know who John Oliver is, actually gave them a shout out.
I saw that
his show. And so it's a thing with minor league baseball teams. Like, how ridiculous can your name get? And, you know, they pulled that off. But when they were getting us into the, you know, welcome to Canned Cheese Park. And then she's like, here's our Montgomery Cheesemongers. I could not stop laughing. And then I forget her name. She's an SNL character.
Oh, Ego Nwodim.
Yes. She's in the booth and now calling the game. And as she's eating this cheese dip, I wrote down the whole thing. I've been noticing a slight numbness in my right arm. And I'm wondering if it's because of the velvety canned cheese I've been eating. And then she proceeds to pour more cheese on whatever she's eating. And then she says, I seem to have stopped seeing the color green. All the colors are in my field of vision, but the grass, for instance, has taken on a gray pallor. I've stopped eating the velvety cheese, but if there's a medical attendant in the stands and wouldn't mind coming to see me, I think that would be a great idea. I just loved that whole velvety cheese thing. And then when Ryan is talking to Stoned Charlie and he says that they're coming out with new flavors and shrimp or seafood,
spicy seafood. Spicy and jalapeno. I was like, spicy and jalapeno? What?
Oh, spicy seafood.
Okay.
That's like the shrimp weenies.
Yes, that's what it made me think of our conversation. I'm like, okay, I'd try it. I'm not going to lie. I love some canned cheese with a pretzel. I would try it.
I love the way that they had to add the word substitute to the name, but like in a way that made you realize that it was subscript. It was like velvety, you know, whatever, cheese, substitute, spread. Like everybody, when they said it, they sort of dropped their voice a little bit and then picked back up. It was so funny.
Yeah, it's the velvety canned cheese substitute spread. It's like, what?
I can't eat dairy. And so I've tried a lot of cheese substitutes. And for the most part, they are disgusting. It's real unfortunate. They leave like a oily film on silverware that can't be easily cleaned. And I just can't stop thinking about what that's doing inside my body. I'm like, if I can't get this off a fork, like it's going to stick to my arteries like no tomorrow. I can't eat this stuff. Anyway, I liked the cheese head things that they were wearing, very clearly like a sort of spoof on the Wisconsin cheese heads, but they were like canned cheese cans. So cute. I love minor league baseball because going to a minor league game still feels like sort of old school Americana. Like they're not as expensive. They're not as crowded. People are there with little kids. You don't care about the outcome that much. I don't know. I like it better than Major League Baseball.
Yeah, I live outside of Hartford, Connecticut. And so we go to Duncan Park. Of course, it's Duncan. And there's the minor league team there is the Yard Goats. And, you know, down in Sugar Land outside of Houston is the Space Cowboys. And I was just like, no, I get it. I was trying to identify specifically where this was. And it was like, okay, Montgomery County. I was like looking for labels or whatever. It's Montgomery County, but I don't know if it was like Montgomery, Alabama, or it's, I wasn't sure where it was. And then when the reporter at the end, when she had her 34 losses, she was announcing the record breaking. They are in fact the biggest losers in minor league baseball. She said, there is in fact no joy in Mudville tonight. And I was like, Mudville, is that a town? And I'm like Googling it. And it is in fact a reference to Casey at the Bat. There is no joy in Mudville is an idiom that refers to a lack of happiness or celebration, often stemming from a disappointing or negative outcome. Originated in the from the poem, Casey at the Bat, where the hero baseball player Casey strikes out and his team loses the game, leading to widespread disappointment in the fictional town of Mudville. I did not realize that until I had to Google trying to figure out where this was. But small towns like this, I feel like it's a bit of a stereotype, because I believe that this was in fact the case back in the 80s and 90s, where small towns would be based, you know, would have a tiny, you know, one team, and then that was what it was based around. But I feel like I've kind of gone on a bit of a tangent, but my bad. But now, like most cities or whatever that have these town or these stadiums are a little bit more diversified. It's not like the stadium provides the entirety of a town's economic system or anything like that.
Oh yeah, I mean, they made it pretty clear on the show that the ballpark itself was teetering on the brink.
Right. And I mean, I don't know if Velvety Canned Cheese Factory shut down. I'm not sure.
I think we're meant to believe that there's still a Velvety Cheese Canned. I'm not going to be able to consistently remember the name. Velvety Canned Cheese Factory. It would be so sad if it was like a defunct product, but it was still like everybody was still wearing the like cheese heads and stuff.
Well, the way she was handing out, Lucille was handing out cans of cheese to people at the beginning of the game, I'm going to guess it's still being manufactured somewhere.
Yeah. Yeah, and the announcer was certainly eating plenty of velvety canned cheese. That's so gross. It was so gross.
She was one of my favorite parts as well, Becky.
Really? Like
my little note is the announcer and her cheese maladies.
Yeah.
All of the things that were going wrong with her throughout five straight days of just announcing and eating cheese. I wish she had been around longer. I wish we'd seen her more often, because I thought she was a bit of a highlight.
So funny. I was like, I don't get what they're doing with Ico Nodum's character.
If you watch a lot of baseball, that character would have been funnier. Especially if, I don't know if you've ever seen the movie, baseball movie, Major League.
Oh yeah.
Where you've got the dudes, like they're literally getting drunk
and, yeah, and they're oversharing. Yeah.
It was just kind of a spoof on the commentators for the game and the way she was so professional, but everything that she was saying was off the wall or about this cheese was just, it just, I don't know. It
very matter of fact and almost yes. like deadpan. Yeah. I thought that was one of the things. It was very Bob Uecker. Like, no one really cares what I'm saying, but I'm going to talk and discuss things because I've got to be my own color person. So this is what's going on with me right now because this team is so bad.
Yeah. Let's talk about the actual conspiracy and conspirators.
I just want to give a shout out to the writers, whoever brought me, it's the gum itself on the show is not called Big League Chew. I paused it and just took a moment of silence for my youth because Big League Chew was the thing. We would, you know, it was designed to look like a bag of dip because that's what baseball players did is they dipped. And we would get our Big League Chew and put a big wad of it in our mouths on the, of course, I played softball, but wasn't very good. But I just, that took me back to a moment in my life that I don't think about very much. And so thank you to the writers for giving us Big League Chew.
Absolutely. That was a lot of nostalgia and callback. And for someone who played 6 or 8, 10 years of T-ball up to maybe I was like 13, 14. You're absolutely right. Big League Chew was the thing. My parents wouldn't get me Big League Chew. They would get me like whatever the sugar-free equivalent was, but it wasn't in little shreds and it wasn't that.
It didn't give you an opportunity to pretend you were chewing tobacco.
Right. I did not have the opportunity to pretend like I was doing something woefully unhealthy.
It's like candy cigarettes aren't around anymore either. Because like, what? Why did that even exist? Yeah.
It was a terrible idea, but the gum was delicious. It was. And we looked flipping cool in there.
Sitting.
On the side, in the dugout with our big wad of chewing gum in our
gross. Dress.
And it was harmless.
Yeah, that is harmless. But
and gross. None of us went on to dip, so...
I've known a few people in my life who are big dippers, and I gotta say, it is not appealing as a viewer.
I mean, I used chewing tobacco and I dipped for 20 years, and like that's what I finally was able to stop doing. There's an appeal to it, like not just a physical appeal, but a like, hey, there's an appeal, and I don't know why, but I don't think you look cool at all, but. Yeah, I mean, there was, especially in the 90s, which is definitively where this looked like it was out of, there was definitely a culture that was what was popular or whatever, especially in sports.
Mm-hmm. Well, I'm going to just go out there and say, if you don't chew tobacco, don't start, because it rips your mouth up and gives you jaw cancer and mouth cancer. So gross. Anyway.
Our PSA for the day.
Yeah. The conspirators, I wrote down at one point, the stupidity of the conspirators, it hurts.
Carl.
Like showing up the very next day in the locker room with a fur coat and being all like, what up, ball girl? And the guy with the solid gold grill and being like, oh, I inherited it. Like they were just, you don't show up the next day with your ill-gotten gains. Like that's the dumbest move ever.
My comparison here is I believe that it was Goodfellas where Robert De Niro, his character, ended up killing everybody who did this really big job because he was afraid that people were going to be dumb and do things like this. It was a huge job. They like, you know, robbed a bank or something like that. And he literally killed like all 11 people that were in the crew because he was afraid that they were going to be dumb and do this. Have you guys ever seen the movie Pain and Gain?
No.
I believe it had Dwayne Johnson in it. Mark Wahlberg. Google it when you get a chance. It is about a group of, based loosely on a true story, about a group of weightlifters that committed a robbery. And the idiocy in that movie with the, it was on par with this. And it's like, you're, how can you be so dumb to not just, hey, I'm doing like, oh yeah, you're Carl, like borrowed my notebook and like did math in the back. And then he got the math wrong of how to split $3 million between five people. I was like,
which is me. I wrote in my notes right here, Carl trying to figure out math is 100% me. I felt for him right there. Math is hard.
They have a sort of a little bit of an artificial universe where people don't seem to have smartphones.
Right.
You know, like Carl could have very easily just used a calculator. I'm sure he has a smartphone. The show pretty regularly kind of pretends that people don't have them. Charlie doesn't seem to have one because she's been on the run so much.
Right.
She did have it quite a bit in the start of this season because that's how she was, well, and the end of last season because that's how she was able to get a hold of
The FBI guy?
Wallowitz.
Yeah, Agent Luca. But she stole the smartphone from Beatrix. There's a scene where Beatrix puts the phone in her bag and we see Charlie clock it. And then later Charlie has that same phone. It has like a big flower sticker on it. Anyway, that's episode one. These conspirators were all pretty dumb. It was a pretty simple conspiracy that they put together and they still couldn't completely carry it off.
I mean, it was so ridiculously stupid.
It was. But dude, the catcher, I don't know, the one who came in with the fur coat the next day, when he is talking to Russ and he's like, dude, what did he call him? I borrowed $8,000 from a guy named, no joke, Shady the Kneecapper McGee.
Yeah.
It's like they were so desperate to pull this off. And then this, you know, Felix comes in. And so they have to come up with, because they were doing fine until they brought in this new
hotshot pitcher.
Yeah. And so they're like, crap, now we're screwed. So I think they all just kind of panicked and really did not do it.
They had to improvise, right? And that's when things go wrong.
Yeah.
I can't fathom that, hey, I've never heard of this guy before. I'm a minor league ball player. I'm assuming double A because he was called up from, I'm assuming, A ball. And I've never heard of this guy before. Didn't know he was in the system. I have zero concept of what his skill level is. We've lost 34 games in a row at this point, or maybe 33 at that point. And it's just like, sure, he was brought up, but like I don't understand the concept of giving him assets, like if speed or something like that. I don't know. I get it. That was what was available.
Well, they needed to reference Doc Ellis.
Yeah.
Yeah. Plot convenience. Sure.
Yeah. When I heard they were going that route, I got excited because I was like, okay, this is funny. They're going back to an actual situation where somebody did this.
I thought Brandon Perea, who played Felix, did an excellent job of playing, you know, tripping on the pitcher's mound without overdoing it. Like, he had these very small moments where he was like holding the ball and he'd be like, oh, you think so? Okay. Like, it was just enough without it being like some overblown caricature of what it's like when someone's tripping. Like, it really is like so much is going on inside their head that the external isn't so obvious.
I think the backflip threw me for a loop.
But that might just be the exuberance of youth. Like that, you could write that off. I mean, they all did pick up that he was high, right? Like the coach was like, whatever it takes, I try not to judge. Did you clock the book he was reading?
Oh, yes.
The coach?
Yeah.
Yeah. So you find yourself in an open marriage.
And then later on when they're getting ready to go out and he's like, let's give one up for monogamy.
Win one for good old fashioned monogamy.
Yeah, there you go. That's what I was like, oh, this guy's going through it right now.
I'll be honest. On the cover of that book, I thought it was Walton Goggins.
Oh, that's funny.
Initially, I paused it. I was like, oh, no, that's not him. I was like, that is. And then he was like, oh, he was high as a kite. But I don't judge. And then he's like, he covers up the book. He's like, I'm working on not judging.
This poor guy. You know when someone is going through something so much that it leaks out in every aspect of their life and you're like, oh, like this is just, things are rough for you. You can't keep it quiet for a second. Oh, I felt bad for the coach in that moment.
That was great.
So, yeah, but the conspirators being so dumb just hurt me a little bit. I thought Simon Rex, or Rex Simon, depends on what you look at in his IMDb history, which name he goes by, did a great job, though, of playing someone who isn't all that bright, but like is appealing anyway. Like I understood why Charlie liked him. He had a twinkle. I don't know.
He did. And did you notice when they were at the bar he got up to leave, like she thrust her whole goodie bag at him. Like,
yeah,
look at
I was
me,
like,
here I am.
My notes say Charlie's flirting makes me uncomfortable.
Yeah. He's so bad at it, but man, I mean, she's putting it out there, literally.
Gator gun.
She really did just like shove her stuff up into his face, which was...
It was a very awkward position. I was like, oh, yeah. Okay. Like, I've never seen Natasha Lyonne do something like that, but okay, sure. That's where we're at.
I mean, I know that the show is sort of playing on Charlie being lonely now. This is one of the things that's happening this season. And... you know, with the gator hunk, she was all like flirty, flirty with the gator guy. And then now she's all flirty, flirty with Russ. It's like, she's just looking for any kind of connection. She wants to be like part of the community of this baseball park. She, you know, she tried to get an office job because she thought she'd find community there, which is really sad. I don't know how long they're going to play this. Like, how many seasons can we watch Charlie like hilariously but awkwardly throw herself at men who are frankly too dumb for her.
Yeah, but I don't think they're putting it in your face. I think it's all very subtle, the way they're doing it, because it's not like the whole episode is surrounded by her trying to get laid or whatever.
Yeah, that's right. True. It's just a side plot.
And it makes a comedic hit every time because her flirting is so bad.
It's
so
really
bad. And then, you know, like last episode, we even had to ask, was she flirting with him or was she just... You know, but so I don't mind them doing it as long as they don't make it a trope. But, you know, it's kind of cute the way they've done it so far, I think.
Yeah.
Speaking of Russ Waddell, I really enjoyed his backstory where, he was a first round draft pick and then, you know, something happened and he lost his fastball and all of the efforts that were made in order to help him get it back and get out of his head. And I wrote these down, ritual tugging, slutty Babe Ruth. I'm assuming that this was the groupie lady. And I mean, that was the one talking, but I was like, I want to know what these are. I want to know I'm assuming I know what ritual tugging is, but slutty Babe Ruth, I want to see slutty Babe Ruth. And that's just me because I was like, oh, all right, that's pretty funny. I did think that the fans were very, very into the minutia of each of the players. I'm assuming that she was like a Susan Sarandon-esque type player or person from Bull Durham. And then the random woman who was, the only
one who had a speaking part. Yeah.
Yeah. Besides the retired cop who, there were so many things about this that again, may have been old throwbacks to Columbo where civilians were allowed to just be by crime scenes or death scenes or whatever. But like, it's like, man, it's super convenient that he's a retired cop and he's familiar with tox screens and, oh, it's a simple reagent test that we could just test his gum. Like, all right, right. But what about his body? Like, I don't understand. I thought that the plot convenient or plot device of the gum being so that Charlie went on a trip was funny and that they were both like, oh no, I don't, neither one of them do drugs, officer. But that was entertaining.
Fully expected Charlie to go find her gum that she had left on that counter and use that for the test instead. But I don't know why they didn't come back around to her. They made a point of having her spit out the gum and have it like get animated, but
right.
Anyway, I liked the retired cop character, and I guess I was willing to overlook the convenience of it because I just found him very likable. I was like, this is a guy I would sit next to at a baseball game. Like, he's cool.
Absolutely.
Same.
Like, he's a fan, but he's not like a wacko, you know, and he's not wearing one of those dumb hats. I'm sorry to people who like those dumb hats. They're dumb. And that other woman was not the Susan Sarandon character in Bull Durham. Susan Sarandon was like more integrated with the team. Sorry. She's my one of my favorite female characters in all the film.
I can appreciate that.
Annie Savoy. Yeah. Anyway, this is not a Bull Durham podcast. Some of my favorite moments in the episode were when people would randomly share their philosophy on life with Charlie. Like the trucker guy, good buddy, he did it last week and he's doing it again this week. He's like got this philosophy on life about how it's the smack after the smack. It's the second smack of inspiration. And then, I mean, they sort of literally have Charlie get smacked in the head with a baseball, which I don't know. I can't believe she survived it, honestly. A baseball strong enough to break through that glass window.
That slowed it down, you know.
I guess so. But and then later, Russ gives her his philosophy of life at the bar where he's all like, if you're given a gift in life, even if it's a strange one, like throwing a little ball swiftly past a man with a stick, when you get a taste of putting it to use, you know, he sort of trails off. But it's like it's basically implies that it gets kind of addictive or you get a high from using your gift. And, you know, Charlie identifies with that. And then we get Hiram's philosophy of life in the acid trip where he's all like, baseball isn't just a pastime, it's past time and whatever it was, but
passing time.
Yeah, it's summed up to baseball is important because of the community around it and people want to be safe at home. And also, for some reason, he was like, Charlie, you need to save the ballpark. It's your duty or whatever.
That was really funny because she's like, from what? From who? What are you talking about? What is happening?
And then it sort of lands in her lap.
I did write, to go along with what you were talking about, Felix's philosophy.
Oh, yeah. Oh, he just wants to go to Belize and look at birds and do things.
God and the monkeys. Yeah. They're the only things that matter.
I like their conversation when they get to the end. And she says, though I've heard it's the second smack that gets you. And Felix says, what does that mean? And Charlie says, I have no idea, but hydrate. And Felix says, thank you, ball girl, for sharing your wisdom. Charlie says, you're welcome. And good luck coming down from whatever you're coming down from. Felix says, no, I don't take anything. Charlie says, me neither, officer. Okay, Godspeed. And then Felix is like, Godspeed.
How old do you think Felix was? Like 20? That poor kid.
Yeah, 20, 22.
At most. Yeah, I don't feel like he was much older than 20.
He deserved so much better than what he got. I do love that they sort of shot themselves in the foot, right? By having him tripping on acid is how he came up with this idea that he wanted to move to Belize and that he needed money. And then he figures out about their plot. And that's why he decides to blackmail them is because Charlie had just been like, do you have money? Like, how are you going to do that?
And yeah, so Charlie almost caused him to come up with the plot in order to get killed. Although Charlie doesn't know that.
No. Right. I mean, ultimately, it's Russ's fault for...
Oh, 100%. Killing. Absolutely. But I did feel like if any one of these things had gone wrong or right, depending on how you look at it, you know, it wouldn't have ended up in that, right? If he hadn't poked him at the very end before he talked about him being a loser and he just threw his gift away and all that. Like, he gave him an out. He said, look, how about I give you $2 million or we split it and you take half and then you go to Belize and then we take the rest of it. Like, these other guys have families or whatever. And Felix is like, oh, no, you're going to give me all of it or I'm going to go to the cops. I'm like, removing hope from a situation makes things more volatile, not less volatile. And I get it. He's tripping for the first time ever. He's high.
And he's a child.
And he's a little boy, basically. But that was, I was like, man, like just like one of these things just needed to go differently in order to save this kid's life to go to Belize and be with God and the monkeys.
Because they're all that matter.
They are all that matter. I hope he's with the God with God and the monkeys in the afterlife, if there is an afterlife. Because he reminded me a lot of Danny from Ted Lasso. Just this like youth talent and energy that he had, this exuberance.
I mean, even the look, even his look. He
looks a little bit like he could be Danny's cousin.
Yeah.
I love Danny. I love Danny so much. I love the way that nothing gets to him except that one thing that got to him in season 3 or 4.
It's 2. At the beginning of season 2.
Oh, it happens at season 2. Okay.
It's the opening. It's the
opening episode. Yeah. Yep. All right. Anyway, no spoilers for Ted Lasso. If you haven't watched it, go watch it, especially if you like this episode and
it's
like sports.
It's amazing.
So what do we think about Charlie's journey, like this like finding her purpose thing? Greg, you said earlier that you have some doubts about it as like a long-term narrative structure for the show.
Yeah, I mean, it's not like, and I think you guys talked about it in y'all's first podcast this season, like where I think you referred to Kung Fu and the Incredible Hulk and how it was kind of like the thing. It's just like, that's the plot device. But like, I don't think that's a sustainable thing when she's just wandering from place to place trying to find community. But like, she could stick around at the ballpark. Apparently she's not going to. There's no reason for her to have to leave. Yeah.
I don't know. The title for next week's episode is Sloppy Joseph, and that would fit in at a baseball park too. I assume it has something to do with somebody who cooks Sloppy Joes.
Yeah, another barbecue episode.
You know, I think it can hold up for the remainder of the season that this is the path she's chosen. But I think Mandy was right last episode when she said most likely if they're going to continue on with chasing her purpose or running from something else, that she's going to end up in trouble with another. She's going to solve a crime, piss the wrong person off, and she's going to end up
on the run again.
Or they want to sustain it a long time. I think the best way they could go about it would be for her to end up working, not for the FBI, but for Luca.
Yeah.
And he sends her on missions. I think they can sustain the rest of this season with her just wandering around aimlessly, free from looking over her shoulder and having fun. I mean, if they keep producing episodes like this, I'm not mad about it.
No.
You know, keep bringing the quality. And if they're going to continue on for another couple of seasons or even another season, they are going to have to figure out a new way or something different than what they're doing. But I hope it ends up she starts doing stuff for Luca.
Yeah. Other murder solving or mystery solving shows that have like an offbeat premise, you know, like Psych or Monk, they work as consultants for the police department and they're in big cities where it's reasonable to believe that enough crime happens that they would be kept busy on a regular basis. Yeah, if she ends up working for the FBI, I guess that would make sense. And it's funny because at one point, didn't he offer her a job or say, like, you should come work for the FBI? And she's like, I'm not the man. Yeah. So they'd have to find a way to make it that she's not really working for them. I don't know. I mean, I'm willing to watch how they do it.
Yeah, I feel like he could make it, you know, kind of a personal favor for him. But also, you know, be like, well, he could be like, you know, I can make sure you've got money to do, you know, to live the life you want to live, whatever. But, you know, if I need you, can I call you? And then, you know, she could be at one of the twins, the apple farm working, and he calls and he's like, hey, something's going on here. I need you to go investigate. And then she's, you know, in the car and gone. I think that could work.
Yeah, no, I think that's probably the smartest way to do it if you're going to continue past the season.
I would think that she would be really tired of sleeping in her car by now.
Well, she got the office job, and then she got the job at the ballpark, so hopefully she's...
How much money do you think being a ball girl for a minor league failing team?
I'm not suggesting that she was being paid a ton, but, I mean, she's friends with the owner. She could, like, give her a place to stay. Like, they've got places... She could sleep in a suite. I mean, if they have suites, I don't know.
I was going to say, I'm sure in somewhere in the locker rooms, there or a coach's office, there's a bed somewhere.
Yeah, absolutely.
I love it when, speaking of ball girl job, she's at the end when she's sitting there and the ball gets hit and she's like, "Deputy Ball Girl, that's you." And she's puffing on her vape, drinking a beer. And she's like, "I do believe you found yourself a promising career."
I really enjoyed that. Yeah.
Her wearing the bolo with almost everything she owned this week.
Yeah. Her style continues to be delightful to me. I love the 70s vibe that she brings to her outfits. And then there's a special Natasha Lyonne edginess that she brings that is so appealing. I did end up watching, I found that movie Out of the Blue, the Dennis Hopper movie that was mentioned in last week's episode. And it was on some free streaming app that I could get on my Roku, but the print quality was horrible. Like it was the sound was a little garbled and it was like really blurry and hard to see. So I didn't watch the whole thing because that was painful, but I watched enough to understand why she kept referencing Linda Manns. Her character that she plays in that movie is this like tough as nails teenage girl who's like got kind of an androgynous look to her, but she's also sexy, but like in a non-binary kind of way. Like, and she's like a raspy voice. And I don't know. It just makes sense that Charlie Kale would have looked up to Linda Manns as some kind of icon when she was a teenager. And that's who she fashions herself after.
Yeah.
It was a pretty good movie, what I could understand of it. But honestly, it was painful to try to watch it. I was like, all right, I get why this is a reference point, but I'm out. I'm done.
I have a couple of one moment and a couple of quotes.
Greg, where are you?
I've got notes, and I guess the biggest point that I have is gambling as players on your team, especially in light of Pete Rose and all of the things that have been happening recently, the catcher was right. Like that's sacrilege. Like that is,
oh yeah.
Like that is 100%. And then the quality of their throwing the game, like it was apparently they were going to lose anyway. Like, but the aspect of them, like how badly, I don't want to say how badly they were throwing the game, but like,
they were doing obviously,
yeah. They yeah. How obvious it was that they were throwing the game. I was just like, "What? This has to be obvious to somebody." And then, oh, there was a 5-game parlay and blah blah blah. And I was like, very easy for anybody to put together.
I mean, Charlie put it together with like basically no baseball knowledge whatsoever, right. Sitting yeah. in that chair in the coach's office, hearing the news report. She was like, $3 million, huh? Something's up." Like, it didn't take a lot. It's kind of surprising that nobody else was also looking into the gambling wins, because that's a suspicious, yeah. yeah. And the way they threw the game was ridiculous. That I have to agree with that.
Yeah, I mean, like, just all sorts of craziness. All right, that's the biggest point that I have. I've just got a couple of other funny notes.
All right, let's get into our favorite like quotes and little funny moments from the episode. Becky, what do you got?
All right, so I've got when Russ is down and out on the couch and Lucille's like, "I brought you a bowl of soup." That was a bowl of melted canned cheese.
Oh, gross.
That's horrible.
Oh, God, it made me smile.
That's not soup.
And I also wanted to just give a shout out to Carol Kane. I love her and anything she plays. And then
she's absolutely legendary. Yeah.
I don't know if you can tell I'm obsessed with the cheese, but the announcer when they're losing and she's drowning her sorrows and she says, "Someone take this away from me. Just know I'm going to put up a fight," when she's eating her nachos and cheese. And then I have two quotes. Charlie, when she gets hired on as the ball girl and Lucille what she's supposed to do. And she's like, Lucille says, "Shagging balls." Charlie says, "Do explain that one."
I can absolutely see where someone who has no idea what that is, like, I'm doing what?
Yeah, I'm going to need you to give me a little more info on that.
The context in which I know shagging is not applicable to baseballs, so yeah.
And then when Charlie notices Russ for the first time and he's signing autographs, and she says, "Who is Mr. Baseball over there?" And there's a fan that says, "If you could sign my cheese."
That was one of my notes, that he's signing cans of cheese. No, it's fine. Yeah. It's fine. I just, one of the things that I wrote down, he's signing cans of cheese.
Oh my God. I liked Charlie's line in that same scene when she's talking to the retired cop and she asks who he is. And, you know, he's like one of the only three people in Montgomery to be in Wikipedia, along with, you know, the guy who invented the cheese. And then he's like, "My cousin who invented WikiLeaks." Or Wiki knees. I was like, "Are you kidding?" And then she's like, "I mingle with royalty," and I love that line. And I am gonna try to find a use for it in my life. Like at some point, somebody's gonna say, "Like, I'm gonna say, "Oh, I'm mingling with royalty," and I'll know what it's from, and they won't know what it's from, and it'll be funny to me.
I don't have these precise quote, but Lucinda talking to Russ as you guys were discussing, and then she's like, "Oh, you know, this guy's going to retire next year. We're going to need a new head groundskeeper." And I'm like, "What?"
And that's then, painful. Yeah.
And they're like, "Oh, has Skip not told?" Try to rework up the courage to do it. I was like, "Oh man, that's a bad way to find out that you're getting let go."
Yeah, that's brutal.
I will say, though, the groundskeepers at, I don't know how it is for football, because a lot of it's turf and whatnot, but you can make bank taking care of Major League Baseball.
It's definitely a good job, yeah.
So I don't know for the cheesemongers, but.
Well, I know on Ted Lasso, at one point, Nate is like, "What are you doing? You're not supposed to be on the grass." And I've absolutely been to Fenway or whatever parks, and they're like, "Do not touch the grass. Like, do not touch the grass, period."
Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, it's a big deal. Yeah, at a major league park, that would probably be a pretty cush gig for somebody who knows a lot about, you know, landscaping and grass maintenance. But I can't imagine that the cheesemongers are paying too much for that role.
Yeah.
The cheesemongers. That'll never stop being a funny name.
It's amazing.
It absolutely made me think of the Walking Dead cheese whatever guy.
Oh, the cheesemaker.
Cheesemaker, yeah.
Oh, it makes me think of the scene in Life of Brian, spoiler alert for like a 40-year-old movie, where they're listening to Jesus's Sermon on the Mount, and they're like far away from him, so they can't quite hear what Jesus is saying. And they're like, "Blessed are the cheesemakers." And then somebody else is like, "I'm sure he means all purveyors of dairy products."
That's great.
I always think about that, but this really reminded me of it hard.
I did find it funny that the inspiration for the scheme came from someone who bet on them losing back-to-back games and won $200 and was like, "Hey, I figured I owed you guys something, so here's the round of drinks on me." I was like, That's super douchey, but yeah. You know, hey, I guess you gave them a quote-unquote idea.
Yeah. It's kind of the least you can do if you bet against your hometown team to share the winnings with them a little bit.
Yeah. My last thing, the yum, the sock saying yum in the introduction of the animation, I was like, oh, now I heard something say yum, and I was like, what? And I heard it, yum. Oh, she's tripping. Okay, that's what's happening. And then she like finds the sock, and then she's just laughing at the sock with the eyes and the mouth. I was like, that's pretty funny. Like, I'm pretty, you know, good on this. I will say the last thing that I have on all my whole note page, and I think you guys have said it before, Charlie has a very bad habit of basically accusing whomever it is who has committed the murder independently without any backup whatsoever. And Like, I'm just like, you.
Yeah, she puts herself in danger a lot.
Yeah, yeah. Like she, if he was inclined, he could have just thrown the baseball at her head, not proved that he could throw 100 miles an hour.
Yeah.
And same thing with the funeral home. And I guess not really last episode, but or not with the crocodile or the gator, but I'm just like, man, like literally every time I'm like, why? Why would you do this? Why wouldn't you have somebody there?
She hasn't learned. She hasn't learned from episode to episode that, like, when she's going to accuse somebody of murder, that she might want to do it at a distance or, you know, in public.
With some backup, a witness.
She does seem to get in and out of trouble every episode, though. So there's something very satisfying about this show compared to a lot of the other shows I watch, because I watch a lot of dark, heavily serialized shows where episode to episode, you're left hanging. There's questions. Things are gloomy. There's a lot of people dying. And this show, every episode wraps up pretty much. So there's a comfort factor, you know, like sometimes watching it is such a nice balm after watching something like, you know, The Handmaid's Tale. That's so heavy. It's like, oh, watch Poker Face. Oh, she solved the mystery. Like,
yeah. You get your comedy, your drama, your suspense, but you get that quote unquote happy ending.
Yeah. I just want to, before we move on to listener feedback, I wanted to talk, just shout out to Gil Birmingham, who played Skip the coach. I have been following him for a long time. I really like him. This is guilty pleasure. He played Billy Black in the various Twilight movies.
And yes, he did.
He is a backbone of those movies and one of the like best parts of them. And I just adore him. He has done a lot of things. He has a very long IMDb page with lots of really interesting stuff on it.
He has a great role on Yellowstone.
Yeah, I was going to say, I didn't even realize he was in Yellowstone, and he's done 53 episodes of it.
Yep.
So I'll have to maybe check that out. I've been hearing good things about that show anyway. And we're back, and it's time for some listener feedback. We have two voicemails this week from our good buddy, Steve, who is going to guest host, I think, next week.
Yes.
So we will listen to his episode 4 voicemail first.
Hello, Murder Magnus. This is Steve. This is going to be for Poker Face Season 2, Episode 4. Oh, the taste of human blood. And that old lady is holding an AK-47. Oh, nice. And we got Kumail and Johnny and Steve Buscemi. So this is from 2019. Is that right? I remember the Glades. It had the Razzle Dazzle girl from Lost in it. And Matt, I don't think that's actually Matt Passmore, though. Kumail and Johnny adopted a baby alligator. That's not good. Okay, I missed all that. 6 years and something what wins later. So I guess now it's 2025. And, oh, those highlights. Oh, that hair. It looks like she got a blowout. Oh, yeah, I would trust my veterinary advice from the animal control guy about how much gator laxative to take. Seriously, she's going to feed him to his own alligator, you think? Is that what she's trying to pull this alligator out of the cage for? No, and she's baiting him with Oreos. You were right. She does still have the CB in her car. I can tell Steve Buscemi's voice from anywhere. He's the other end of the radio. TikTok talk. Okay, so she's got to the green room before the alligator gets coked head out. But what's going to happen after? Okay, so now we know how the twisty tie got on the lock. But Charlie's looking for Oreos too. Oh, but her dollar is all messed up. He just said, taste of human blood. I believe that's the title of the episode. So it's a mic drop. Oh, and Charlie finds the other Oreos that somebody used to lure the gator out. Hey, at least she wasn't friends with the victim this time. She just, you know, saw the victim run past her to go to the bathroom. He said, taste of human blood again. Or the other guy said, taste of human blood. Another mic drop. You've never eaten bread? No, literally not once. How many times are they going to say it? Taste of human blood. Title of the episode, mic drop. Taste of human blood. Title of the episode, another mic drop. How many of these are going to be? Oh, it's exhausting. But how did he get blood on his sunglasses? Taste of human blood. Title of the episode, mic drop. Of course, this was Rusty that said it with the shotgun. So how did they get the gator onto the catering cart? Oh, there it was. She said that she loved the two-hour power stuff. And Charlie said BS. There it is again, the BS. I love it. We haven't seen Evan Charlie this season yet. Hey, Charlie, you need to shut up because you're talking to a murderer right now. So Charlie's figured it out. She's going to solve murders along the highway. Taste of Human Blood. Title of the episode, mic drop. And she's out. See ya.
I love Steve so much.
I love that he's like, how many times are they going to say it? This is exhausting.
Yeah.
I hope you recovered, Steve, in time for your episode 5 voicemail. Here we go.
Hello, Murder Madness. This is Steve, and this is going to be for Poker Face Season 2, episode, 5 now? Oh, Jackson Brown. Good song. Hometown Hero. Oh, and this one's got Carol Kane in it. Yeah, I think that was the canned cheese woman that we just saw. Oh, the relevancy of this with Pete Rose posthumously being reinstated, eligible for the Hall of Fame now after gambling on baseball. These guys gambling on these is not good. Still relevant, though. Okay, so game one would be this guy's, the pitcher's next start, right? But then after that, he doesn't play anymore. He's still in the dugout, though. What? Okay, now it's game four. How is he starting game five? I thought they were just, he was just going to start one more game. This doesn't make any sense. Miss here, was he supposed to start all 5 games, I guess? Did he just say he spiked the kid's gum with acid? That's not good. The LSD is actually making him better. Okay, so they lost the game. I don't understand that last pitch, but okay. And now, how is Charlie going to get involved? But here the kid is with the notebook and the names, and he knows that what happened. Oh, he's going to blackmail him for the $3 million. Oh, and then he just threw the ball back at him, and ooh, that's the kid's down. And he's probably dead. That 100-mile-an-hour fastball. Okay, so Charlie's been working alone in this office, and baseball just came through the window, and she's talking to Carol Kane. So Charlie's the ball girl, and now she's just been introduced to Rocket Ross. Rocket, that's hard to say. Okay, so that's how the kid figured out that he was high, is Charlie just telling him he was, but not really. And then we see where he found the notebook notation. I don't know. I get it. She's seeing Ryan from The Office because she just binge-watched The Office in her little trip. Oh, BJ Novak, that's right. And Carol Kane is his granddaughter. It would also show up in his blood, not just on the gum. These guys just have no clue of how to hide the money that they just won. How many last games does this guy have? He just said, I'm pitching my last game tomorrow. Oh, and she just called him on his lie. I absolutely love this B plot with the coach and his marriage. Let's go win this one for monogamy. Okay, so now he didn't play in the last. I don't get. Oh, that was pretty clever. She tricked him into throwing his 100-mile-an-hour fastball, and the cops are there to pick him up. Good job, Charlie.
Concur with everything that you said, Steve.
Thanks, Steve.
So amazing.
I love your live Steves. Please keep them coming. And
never, ever
I guess
stop.
Next week, we'll have a live Steve.
Yes.
Since he'll be on the episode with us. That will be fun. That's the one called Sloppy Joseph.
I'm trying to figure out if there was a mic drop that he missed. I feel like they said Hometown Hero at some point regarding Russ, but maybe not. I don't know.
Yeah, I did not pay attention.
I didn't pick up on it if they did.
After 5 last time, I mean, maybe they didn't feel a need to.
Yeah. We wore it out last time. Let's not make that mistake again.
All right, that is our show. Don't forget to subscribe to Murder Magnets wherever you get your podcasts.
If you want to write in or leave us a message, you can find all our contact info at podcastica.com. And you can find our other shows and links to our social media pages. I'd like to give a shout out to the Handmaid's Tale coverage. The show is blowing my mind this season, and the coverage is equally as good. So you can find that on podcastica.com. Please check it out.
I want to give a shout out to Becky's What's On Tonight, because I finally watched The Pit.
Yay!
And then I was able to listen to some of her episodes with Mandy covering The Pit on What's On Tonight, and they do great coverage. I loved it. I don't know if I'm going to be able to go back and, like, it's hard once you've done binging a show to listen to, like, all the old episodes of a podcast, but I'm definitely going to listen to your interviews.
Awesome.
Because you've interviewed a bunch of the cast, and I think that's going to be really interesting.
We have Myrna, the lady handcuffed to the wheelchair.
Yeah.
We're interviewing her this weekend.
That's awesome. That's going to be awesome. She's such a funny character.
So thank you, Penny. I'm glad you're listening.
You're welcome.
Please check us out.
Greg, what are you listening to these days?
I've been listening to The Daily Show, which is not Podcastica, but it is phenomenal because I don't ever actually watch it. But I'm going to plug the Zedhead group And I was just listening to the Jason and Karen show, is a Patreon exclusive through Jason Cabassi, and it was a wonderful 2-hour conversation between the two of them covering a wide range of things. But Karen's moved to Pittsburgh, and for someone who's listened to them for 10 plus years, it was a lot of fun.
So the Zedhead group, for people who don't listen to a bunch of podcasts like we do, is a Patreon exclusive group that you get to be a member of if you donate to Jason's Patreon at a certain level. And it is a really wonderful community that we're all a part of. And there's an exclusive Facebook group, but then there's also a lot of communication and things that happen outside of that. There's a lot of chat groups online where we talk about all our favorite shows. And, you know, it's a great place to find people who want to talk about nerdy stuff with you, because a lot of us don't have those people in our real lives. And then sometimes we have meetups where we get to meet people in person, and that's super fun. We just had one a few weeks ago in Boston, and it was really great. So if you are at all interested, we'll put that information in the show notes.
But for this show, next time, we'll be covering season 2, episode 6, as stated before, Sloppy Joseph.
That's all for this episode. Thanks for listening.
And Mandy Walker,
we know what you did, you psycho.
Gator done.
In Indiana, summer means more than sunshine. It's hiking miles and miles of trails to magnificent views and cruising through caves on underground river rides. It's spending the night in a floating cabin and scuba diving into your next big adventure. It's riding a horse and buggy through historic towns and camping with elephants at a wildlife park. It's anything but ordinary. Plan your trip at inindiana.com/summer.